Amanda and I were there. Amanda, you gonna say something?
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the council chambers, the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, August 10th, 2011. It's 9:30 a.m. A quorum is present. Sue, how are you this morning?
Very well, thank you.
Do you think the sun will ever come back on a sustained basis?
Well, I hope so.
You're hoping so. Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Could I please have Professor Tammann come forward, please? Mr. Tammann is the director of the Mark O. Hatfield School of Government. And as many of you know, earlier this week we lost a great man, a governor, state legislator, a senator, secretary of Oregon Secretary of State, U.S. Senator. And we're going to have a moment of silence, but before I do that, this is Commissioner Fish's suggestion. I think it's a great one, Professor Tammann, to say a few words of reflection about Senator Hatfield.
Thank you very much, Mayor Adams.
Lift the mic up just a bit.
There you go. Thank you very much, Mayor Adams. And thank you, Nick Fish, not only for the invitation, but for your decade-long support of the Hatfield School here in Portland State. And to you, Dan Saltzman, for your leadership on the disaster assistance preparation for this city. Hopefully we'll never have to use some of those federal dollars, but if we do, you've put us in the position to use them in the most wise way possible. I want to take you all back today to 1995. It was a time that's very similar to what we're living in right now. The Republicans had just been swept into office in 1994. They picked up 52 seats. Newt Gingrich was the new Speaker of the House of Representatives, and he declared that there was a Republican revolution, and Democrats felt that and believed that. He came into power, as well as the other 52, on the back of the contract with America, promises, legislative promises that the Republican Party agreed to put forward. President Clinton famously said, well, this was a contract on America, not with America. Nonetheless, there were two crown jewels in the contract. The first was the line item veto. It passed the House of Representatives and the Senate very swiftly as Democrats ran for the high grass, seeing in the country this new anti-government, anti-spending spirit. But it was soon declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court of the United States. That left standing the one last big prize for the Republican Revolution, the Balanced Budget Amendment. It, too, was put before the House of Representatives, where there was a vote, overwhelming vote, of 300 to 132. Democrats, again, changing their vote to protect their political positions to the degree that they could. Then it went to the Senate. In the early days of 1995, every senator disclosed his or her preference on about how to vote. Senator Dole, the majority leader, was keeping the tally. He knew it was going to be razor thin, but he thought he could pull it off. It was important for the Republican Party to have a win, a national win. And unbeknownst to other folks, President Dole was going to run for the presidency in the next election. It was very important personally for him because he was going to make the balanced budget amendment the central point of his campaign. So when he looked at his list of 52 Republicans in the Senate, 51 had declared opposition to the support for the balanced budget amendment, and one declared opposition, Mark O. Hatfield of Oregon, and thereupon launched one of the most massive and tough-minded lobbying campaigns against a single senator in the history of the United States Senate. In the first phase, senators who were friends of Senator Hatfield would come up to him, put their arm around his shoulder and say, Mark, do this for the party. We really need this vote. And when that didn't work, other senators argued, you were governor. Most governors have to balance their budget. Shouldn't we do the same at the national level? And when that didn't work, then they started saying, patriotism, Mark, be a patriot. Do this for your country. A lot of pressure. Hatfield had studied the balanced budget amendment, and to use his words, he called it phony because it had no enforcement mechanism, and if it were to be enforced, it would hurt millions of people. This would violate his principles, he argued. So the Republican leadership ratcheted up the pressure. They had a caucus meeting at which some of the Young Turks in the party stood up and told Senator Hatfield they were going to strip him of his seniority on the Appropriations Committee. All of his lifelong work in the Senate would come to naught. Not one more dollar would go to Oregon if he didn't change his vote and vote with them. That, too, had no effect on Senator Hatfield. In fact, he angrily responded to them saying, you are the same people who will come back to me as chairman of the Appropriations Committee with your hand out for dollars after this vote. The senator stood by his vote, cast it, and was the deciding vote on the balanced budget amendment. Now, everything I've just told you is on the public record, and a good researcher could find that and write this story. But I'm here this morning to tell you another portion that is not publicly known. The day after the balanced budget vote, I was sitting in an ornate office in the National War College, where I was one of the deans, and I received a phone call. It was Mark Hatfield. He called, and I heard this melodious voice saying, Ron, this is Mark Hatfield, not Senator Hatfield, not Mr. Chairman, as everyone in Washington called, just plain old Mark Hatfield. And he started to apologize. I had called him 2 days earlier, like hundreds of others before me. I was seeking an appropriations for my school to help renovate this turn-of-the-century building that needed new classrooms so badly. And he apologized for coming back so late, and I said, well, you had much more important things to do with the balanced budget amendment and how much I admired his vote on that. He paused, a long pause, and he said, well, you've worked on Capitol Hill for a long time, and given where you sit today, I think you may be interested in the following. He said, the day of the vote, I walked over to the Senate floor and sat down in a seat in the Republican cloakroom, a little anteroom off the Senate floor. I could hear the vote going on in the background as one senator after another voted. A senior Republican leader, I'm not going to use his name, came into the cloakroom and put his hand on Mark Hatfield's shoulder and said, Mark, we really need your vote on this. I need your vote on this. The country needs your vote on this. I know the people of Oregon love you. You can get away with this vote. They will follow your lead. They value your leadership so much that you can make this work. Furthermore, we will give you political cover. We'll come to Oregon and give you political cover. Senator Hatfield again paused, and he said, I had a flash immediately upon hearing those words, a flashback to World War II, a flash to when I was running a landing craft from a troop ship onto the shore. We thought it was going to be an easy landing, but instead it was carnage, utter carnage on the shore. He would later write that bodies were stacked up like cordwood along the beach. Men were pinned down from every direction. The cries of anguish, the limbs that were blasted off of bodies could be seen. The air was full of distraught, full of anguish. The reason for that was that there was not a rock, not a tree, not a wall for anyone to hide behind on that beach. There was no cover. And when he heard this senator tell him about cover, he said to himself, how can I accept political cover when these boys died without cover? And he excused himself from the presence of the senator, and he walked out, stood behind his chair, and calmly and firmly voted nay. Well, as for the $6.9 million, I didn't get it. Instead, he put $12 million in the Defense Department budget, enough to renovate two buildings. And when the Secretary of Defense wrote him a hot letter saying this is not in the president's budget, OMB didn't approve it, it's the Secretary of Defense doesn't want it, he replied calmly to them, education is too important not to fund. So this is all we need to know about that man. And I thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Director.
We'll now have a moment of silence in honor of the life. We'll now have a moment of silence in honor of the life and accomplishments and in support of the family of Senator Mark Hatfield. Thank you all very much. We will proceed with the agenda, beginning with communications. This morning we have five communications. They are all related. So we'll begin with item number 825. Can you please read the title?
Request of Renaud Catalani to address council regarding 2011 New Portland World Cup Soccer.
Salam and good morning, Mr. Mayor, Honorable Commissioners. Buenos dias, jefes y doña. My name is Ronald Latang Sayang Catalani. I have the honor, really, and the duty of swinging the city's muscular bureaus to integrating newcomers into the life of our precious city on the shores of these wonderful rivers. One of the things that was done over the last fall, winter, and ended with the New Portland World Cup tournament on the 4th of July weekend is what we want to present to you this morning. At least the highlights, there were 5,000, 6,000 hours committed to this. There were 363 kids forming 12 teams of 21 nationalities, ethnicities, and neighborhoods around our marvelous city. But what I wanted to just, as a way of ramping these folks forward to come speak to you, give you some context on, is that it took three very muscular tiers of partnerships to get these kids and to get these families thinking of themselves as Portlanders, as proud Portlanders, not marginalized ones, not neglected ones. It took, of course, city bureaus. Commissioner Leonard, again, your Water Bureau volunteer driver borrowed that bus that's sitting there, ordinarily taking people out to the reservoir, driving kids very, very early mornings to the tournament.
You just generated another news article, Renaud. Thank you.
Tim Anderson, we are so grateful. He's always on it. He's always a call away. What a gentleman. It took, of course, firefighters. And this time it took two stations, and we had real macho firefighters condition these kids, train them. Our firefighters didn't know an awful lot about football, about soccer, but they know how to be big brothers, big uncles to these kids, and that's what we need. It took, of course, Parks and Recreation. Alejandro and Max Baer pulling this thing together late, late nights, early, early mornings, I assure you, more than 40 hours a week. It took our community partners, David Douglas High School, for one, always there with proudly hanging 77 flags in their cafeteria, representing all the children in that neighborhood, all the families proud to be East Portlanders. But really, we're most proud of the big uncles and the elder aunties in our communities who pull this together. These are folks then who don't get paid to go to meetings, who circle the block until they find a doggone parking place at City Council, who will also be represented here this morning. So for the folks who cannot find time on the agenda this morning, we would like to recognize, we really need to recognize everybody's big auntie, teacher Ann Downing from David Douglas High School. Would you please stand up? Ann Downing, as you may well know, has got the nation's only Bhutanese-American student club, and that student club has Africans, has Asians, has Arabs, has Latinos on it. We all love to eat and play together. We also need to recognize Mr. Jamal Dar, again, on his own time, on his own effort, ask his wife, ask his children, has put together Asian Youth and Community of Oregon. And he's done so many things, as Commissioner Fritz knows, because she's in his neighborhood and is constantly having to attend his his big events with families, helping them feel like they belong in the city and that the city is committed to them and we need their commitment to participatory democracy. I'd like to hand the program proper over to my colleague Alejandro Vidales from Park and Recreation.
Good morning. My name is Alejandro Vidales, and I'm the Outreach Coordinator for Parks and Rec. Thank you for your time this morning. Like Polo mentioned, this event really began with the idea of bringing communities together to get a taste of what Portland's about. I think part of the integration and becoming a part of Portland is being able to celebrate your culture and feel accepted. And I think in the process of bringing all these kids and all the different community agencies that shaped this event, one of the great things was the work that began to happen internally with the bureaus and our partnerships and this excitement that began to grow with the different departments. I think we wanted to give the opportunity for the fire department to say a few words about their involvement and their relationship that was built with the youth. That was also one of the exciting things because through this tournament, besides getting to know and break down some of the cultural barriers, I think the relationships that were built with our staff and with the kids and with the families and having the kids that they refer to the firefighters, those are our guys. And the same from the fire department, really connecting with the kids and with the families and that sense of pride and again, where we come from, but the pride and the people who serve us in this community. So with that being said, I'd like to bring Paul Cora in the Portland Fire Department up here.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Fire Bureaus, thanks to everybody for letting us have an opportunity to coach some teams throughout the city of Portland. What a great opportunity. The firefighters are actually weren't coaches in soccer. Not a lot of them played soccer, but we provide a lot of mentorship to the kids. It was a great opportunity to have cross-bureau partnerships through the Water Bureau and other agencies. It was a great opportunity. All our firefighters are excited about coming back next year to help coach and mentor some of the kids. It was a great opportunity. And one of our coaches has a little excerpt I'd like to read from a letter they wrote to our chief. It's from Lieutenant Dave Barron. Says, I coach the Eastside United of David Douglas High School. I would like to particularly tell you about a book report that was given to me from one player. In summary, it tells about how a family was purposely displaced, discriminated against, and finally had everything taken from them because of their religious beliefs. For a few weeks, the World Cup soccer tournament brought the kids a sense of community, acceptance, and accomplishment. Again, it was a great opportunity to participate this year, and we're honored and we're glad to do it again next year, and a great partnership with Portland Parks. So thank you again. And all the kids from all the teams did get a chance to sign a jersey, and they'd like to give a jersey to the mayor as a gift, so I'll bring it forward.
Wonderful. Does anyone else wish to speak?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Som Subedi from Oregon Bhutanese Association.
Yeah, let the champs give that to them. Respected Mayor and Commissioners, I'm Som Subedi, and I represent Bhutanese community in Oregon, and we are the partners we are one of the partners for the Portland World Cup Soccer Tournament for this second year. So discipline, dynamism, and development are three lessons a youth can learn at early age, which will benefit their community in long term. These are the lessons of soccer. In Bhutanese refugee camps, I was a soccer player, coach, referee, and organizer. In the refugee camps, soccer was everything. It gave us hope while we waited to return to our homeland, Bhutan. It connected different cultural and ethnic groups together for peace and harmony. Soccer in America began us in 2010, shortly after our arrival in Portland. Portland Parks and Recs provided a great opportunity to our community for partnership to organize the first World Cup soccer tournament 2010 in our home, a soccer city. In this second year, World Cup, we focus on participation of the new immigrant, refugees, and newcomers kids and tried not to leave anyone behind. This year, we brought youth together from Far East Portland to West and from South to North Portland. Building friendship and connection among the youths, families, and communities is the motto of this World Cup tournament. I saw the kids of every color and background shaking hands and hugging each other in the Delta Park soccer fields. We witnessed youth from all over the world making a healthy connection, sharing a game they love, instead of racial tension and gang conflict. This Portland World Cup event made us feel lucky we are here, all here together in Portland in friendship. Thank you.
And lastly, we'd like to invite the winning coach, Coach Husseini.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Husseini Makano. I am originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo. First of all, I would just like to thank the people who organized the tournament because a lot of people don't understand how much soccer means to immigrant youth. For a lot of people, that's the only activity they know. From the age of zero until you come to America, for some of us, that's all we knew, playing soccer and school. That's about it. When the opportunity of playing this tournament came, first of all, I'd like to thank my brother. You there? He's right there. He helped me organize our team from East Portland to North Portland. We had 10 nationalities on our team. And one of the reasons we named our team Afro-Asian, because it was so mixed, we had to come up with some type of name. And now we have changed our name to Global Football Club.
Oh, nice.
Because we know that if Portland wants to move forward, we need to all work together. And we all need, as youth, we need to grow together. More importantly, one thing that really touched my heart is the East Side team. The East Side team was working with the firefighters. And for me, when I first came to America, I was 13 years old. I never really thought that I could get, like, I could work with the firefighters or, like, I could talk to firefighters because I was like, that's Americans. I don't know if I should even try to go talk to them. And it's just an amazing thing to have this opportunity. Our kids, I'm telling you, we didn't win money, we didn't win nothing, but I'm telling you, the unity that we have on our team, the way people work together, the way people came together, most of them didn't even speak the same language, but they knew how to speak to each other somehow through the ball. And so for that, I'd just like to say thank you. Thank you so much. This is a great opportunity for the city to welcome new Portlanders to the city. And if you play your cards right, the city, you have a better future with the new immigrants. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coach Osemi's team, a mixed Arab, Asian, African, Latino team, with all due respect to my Mexican cousin, did beat the all-Latino team in the finals. So I think there's something to be said here about mixing it up in Portland, Oregon. And when Coach Osemi has the Afro-Asian team jersey with his winning team's name, which we'll present to City Council through Mr. Mayor.
Oh, thank you. Please come up. Yeah.
We have received.
Thank you very much.
We have reserved 2 minutes and 32 seconds, maybe to get a shot of the City Commission giving the trophy again to Coach Osemi.
Sure.
Because not all the commissioners could come out to Delta Park on Saturday after a long, long, sweaty day.
All right, let's do it.
All the lightweights are on this side.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Commissioners, and thank you, Portland, for welcoming our newcomers.
All right.
Mayor, if I might just make a comment.
Please.
Thank you, all of you, for being here this morning, and Paula Catalani from the Office of Human Relations for coordinating this presentation. Thanks to Ann Downing, one of our great partners at David Douglas High School, who provided all the pizza, more pizza than I have ever seen in one place in my life. And it disappeared like crazy. And I want to compliment the players on the standard of play. I was very, very impressed. And if there's any Timber Scouts watching, I think they need to be in contact with Coach McCano about number four, who scored the first goal in the final. He is absolutely fantastic.
Mayor, if I could just add one other comment. I'm so proud of the work that Max and Alex and everyone from the Bureau did, and the Water Bureau and the Fire Bureau and all of our partners and the school district. A big thank you. It was fitting that this tournament was held at Delta Park. Delta Park was the favorite space of former Parks Director and former Commissioner Charles Jordan. And as those of you who knew and know him well, of events like this, he would always say, it's more than fun and games. Something else is going on, and you've demonstrated that through this festival and through this tournament. And thank you for inspiring us, and I know that most of the work was done beyond your normal duties, and that makes us even especially proud of what you've accomplished. So thank you all very much.
And you're welcome to stay for see democracy happen, but we will not be offended if you have other things to do as well.
I need to get up and leave.
I will now consider the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Sue, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. We have a 9:30 time certain. We have a number of people signed to testify. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, number 830.
Revise residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges to address new collection services effective October 31, 2011.
Staff, please come forward. In 2007, the Portland City Council adopted the Portland Recycles Plan to increase the waste recovery rate in Portland to 75% by 2015. In 2009, we adopted the Climate Action Plan to reduce greenhouse gas impacts of the waste collection system by 40% by 2030, reducing greenhouse gas emissions in total by 80% below 1990 levels by 2050. Both plans recognize the importance of moving forward on the item before us for council consideration to provide curbside food scrap composting. Over the past year, we have been testing a curbside food scrap composting pilot program in 4 Portland neighborhoods. A big thank you to the 2,000 pilot households in the Arnold Creek, Powell Hurst Gilbert, Richmond, and Roseway neighborhoods. And also a big thanks to our great team of haulers who volunteer to provide the new service in the pilot areas, including Allied Waste, Aero Sanitary Service, Hyberg Garbage and Recycling, and Waste Manage. We are very blessed as a city to have such high-quality haulers and a great public-private partnership. Thank you. Pending City Council approval, we are prepared to expand the program citywide on October 31st, 2011. Bottom line, instead of putting your food scraps into the garbage bin, we'll be picking up food scraps as along with yard debris in the green Portland compost roll carts. The green cart will be picked up weekly, and the garbage will be picked up every other week. More than 90 cities in the U.S. offer some sort of curbside food scrap composting program. We're not exactly cutting edge here, folks, including San Francisco and Seattle. Some of these programs include the every other week garbage collection approach, including Olympia and Renton, Washington. This is a smart and efficient program. Smart because we are working hard to keep the costs at status quo for as many people as possible. Smart because we will take food composting and convert it into nutrient-rich soil reused by Portlanders. The buy local food, recycle the food, and turn it into compost is part of the complete system as part of the Climate Action Plan. Now I'll turn it over to Susan Anderson and the team from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to provide more details on the proposal. Director Anderson.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me here today, along with a whole group of haulers and residents who will join the conversation, is Bruce Walker, the manager of the Recycling and Solid Waste Program, and Arianne Sperry, the program coordinator. As the mayor indicated, we're here today to actually deliver on a plan that was adopted in 2007, the Portland Recycles Plan. At that time, council adopted a plan that would set a 75% recycling goal by 2015, and it laid out how we were going to get there. Phase one of the 2007 plan began a few years ago. You all remember a couple of years ago, you got your new big blue and green roll carts. This provided a huge boost in recycling with the blue roll cart and a lot more space for yard waste in the green cart, though the yard debris is still picked up only every other week currently. Phase two, which again was also adopted in 2007 as part of the Portland Recycles Plan, will step up the program to allow you to put food scraps, including meat and veggies and eggs and your pizza boxes, all of that, in with your yard debris, in your green roll cart, and it will be picked up every single week. As a result, yard debris, food waste, recycling will be picked up every week, and this means there will be very, very little left in your garbage. So your garbage can be picked up every other week. So why are we doing this? Well, first of all, composting, as the mayor says, takes the mix of food scraps and yard debris and turns it into a rich compost. The compost is a valuable product for gardens and agriculture. It's also really cost efficient. The tipping fee for food scraps is much lower than the tipping fee for garbage, and that helps to keep our overall monthly garbage bill rates down. Another reason to compost is that when food is put in the landfill, it breaks down and produces methane, a potent greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. There's about 30,000 tons of food every year from Portland residents that goes to the landfill. If we were to recover all that, it would cut the equivalent carbon emissions by about 30,000 tons. And in real terms, that's equal to cutting 3 million gallons of gasoline use a year. And so this is a big, big change in terms of the impact on the environment by this simple change of moving food waste and being able to compost it. So it's good for the environment, it's cost efficient, and it uses a waste product to develop a valuable commodity. Bruce will now tell you a little bit about some of the details of the program, but before he does that, you might have seen the editorial this morning in the Oregonian about this program. And they were saying that what we're doing here is kind of shoving people into this. I'd really say that it's not a shove. It's not a push. It's neither of those things. What we're doing is taking people by the hand and gently walking them through step by step into a new kind of process. It's going to be simple to do. It is change. Change is always hard for some people, but we're going to be there to help people step through the process. And we did the pilot for more than a year, and 87% of the people said they were fine with it. So we're pretty confident that we can get people through the process. I think really the story should have been something more like that the city actually figured out how to provide a new service, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and compost food, and do it without raising rates. And I think that's really what we've done here. And other cities have done the same thing, and I think it's kind of time for Portland to get in line with the rest of the major cities on the West Coast. Bruce.
For the record, I'm Bruce Walker, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We launched the Portland Compost Program 6 years ago for Portland businesses, and there's more than 700 businesses actively participating. So it's an established concept in the business community. Already 50% of local households practice backyard composting of vegetative materials. This new residential composting program we're bringing forward today will give all families a place to put many food scraps that should not be going in the backyard composting bin. Things like meat, fish, bones, tofu, bread, dairy, rice, pasta, food soiled paper like paper towels or cheesy pizza boxes. Until now, we had insufficient transfer station capacity for the food scrap material for a residential program. Thanks to the work of private firms and Metro, we have the ability to start a citywide program. After coming...
If I could interject, this is not dependent on the council approving, for example, the proposed addition of food scraps in the existing yard debris in Lent. It's not dependent on council approving that and able to move forward, correct?
That is correct.
What on that subject, would that cause that site to be used more often, this program?
Not without our approval, but yes, for food composting, yes.
It would generate more the food scraps to go through.
Generate more than what they predicted in their proposal before us?
It could in the short term. However, in the long term, what this is going to do is build a new product for people to take, which means potentially and very likely there will be other places that will open up to take that. So their demand will increase, but whether they can hold on to that demand may not happen because this is a product that's worth, and there's money to be made. So there may be others that will open up similar facilities.
In the pilot program, we came to council last year and we kicked it off in May 2010. That included the 2,000 households in the neighborhoods that Mayor Adams listed. Even though many U.S. communities have started food scrap collection programs, we needed to get Portland-specific results. That's why we did the pilot, and we launched it with the same program elements that were adopted by Council in the Portland Recycles Plan. Here's a map of the neighborhoods from the service areas of the volunteer haulers. We looked for geographically diverse as well as demographically representative areas of the city. From left to right on the map, Arnold Creek in southwest, serviced by Allied Waste; Richmond in southeast, serviced by Aero Sanitary; in northeast, Roseway, serviced by Hybrid Garbage; and in East Portland, Palhurst Gilbert, serviced by Waste Management. The pilot evaluation was extensive, including surveys and focus groups of pilot households, as well as field observations. This is what we found out. The 66% daily use of the compost program is higher participation than we've seen in other cities that have had programs going for a few years. Recovering about half the food scraps during the first year is a really strong outcome. We believe that as residents get used to this new program, we'll see the rate increase over time, just as we have for the recycling rate in the residential program. The 87% satisfaction rating is a high number for the first year, but we acknowledge that this is a big change, and we are prepared to help people with these changes. That's why we are proposing to bring additional customer service staff, extending our call service hours, our call center hours, and placing two staff in neighborhood coalition offices to work with the public.
And that includes actual site visits if folks need help troubleshooting with unique circumstances in their home.
That's correct. We are ready to get out there and make this system work. For pilot outcomes, on the garbage side, it shows it's very significant that the amount of garbage collected from the household dropped almost 30%. This is compared to pre-pilot baseline data in the pilot areas as well as data collected in adjacent control routes during the pilot. Our fieldwork found that on garbage pickup day, 40% of the every other week garbage households did not have full cans. And with every other week garbage, we assumed that there would be a larger number of customers who had to switch to a bigger can, but only 7% of those pilot customers did need to move to a larger garbage can. So while we know that every other week garbage presents a real shift for Portland residents, we are confident that the ongoing support of our customer service and outreach staff, people will be able to make this adjustment.
And how long has the exotic and faraway city of Olympia been doing the every other week garbage pickup combined with food scrap and recycling every week?
They moved to the every other week garbage in 1998, and 4 years ago included the food scrap. So they've had the program in place for a number of years. Here are the recommended program components. We found that the household uses the food scrap collection system, the more they like it. Makes sense. Most residents just needed to try getting their food scraps into the green cart, and then the satisfaction went way up. Their concern about putting food scraps in the green roll cart were relieved when they realized it's not that much different than putting the food scraps in the garbage can. Again, our staff, our customer service staff, is going to be here to help, and there are lots of great tips that we'll have about making composting and every other week garbage really manageable. So what's the program going to cost? We estimate that 80% of the customers will not experience a rate increase from this new program. Customers will get double the yard debris service and obviously able to add food scraps into the program as they move with the every other week garbage really helping to keep the cost down. Some customers may need to increase their container size, but as I mentioned before, it was only 7% in the pilot. The 60 and 90 gallon roll carts that you see are going to experience about a $2 per month rate increase. To wrap up, we're very excited about this new program. We also recognize that we're a little behind the curve on this one and that other cities have moved ahead on composting for residents, and we're eager to catch up. We're also eager to begin working with Portland residents and getting this underway this fall. Thank you, and we're happy to answer any questions.
We've got a number of citizens signed up, and if I could oblige the council to roll through the testimony, and staff will stick around for more conversation and questions afterwards. So, Sue, could you please call the...
Actually, we have six. Terry Parker, Eric Fruits, Steve Lipsy, if you'll come up, please. They'll be followed by Valerie Hill, Mike Dewey, and Reva Shippers.
Lisa? So we have more than six.
We have four more. Got it.
Good morning. Welcome back to the City Council. Mr. Parker, would you like to begin?
Thank you. Terry Parker, fourth generation Portlander. There needs to be an amendment test to this ordinance that states, while on the job, City Council members are required to wear size 12 high-top army boots. The following reasons apply. First of all, this slop bucket stuff is a dictator-like brew of social engineering muck that needs to be waded through by the control mindset brewmasters. Secondly, part of this autocratic package is to prescribe that one size, one garbage pick up every 2 weeks, and one lifestyle fits all, as long as it's the council's pick for a color of a Model T and the council's choice of direction for daily life in the kitchen. Not only are you reducing basic service, but you are discriminately increasing the cost of living for single-family residences. So what's next on this dictatorial agenda? Food police telling people what to eat, dirty diaper decrees, or maybe a Gestapo-like garbage patrol force? The two oversized clamshell containers at my residence sit behind the garage unused and mired in weeds because there is no convenient, accessible, out-of-sight place to put those monstrosities. The huge mouth makes them difficult to maneuver through the narrow openings from the backyard to the street. I had been using one of the yellow boxes to recycle paper products until the box disappeared along with the garbage truck. Like the City Council, Waste Management is focused more on extracting money from residents and regulating lifestyles than providing good customer service and democratic choices. Pickup service has become so far-reaching it requires a fleet of huge trucks for different huge fleet of huge trucks for each bin type simultaneously pounding the streets and consuming fossil fuels. Lofty city control rates are the same whether your garbage can is full, half full, or nearly empty. The only way to get your money's worth is to have a full can. Any responsible recycling business plan should be financially self-sustainable and not cost residents anything. Pickup service for recyclables needs to be funded by the profits made by the recyclers who turn the recycled materials into marketable goods. As we all know, this hearing is only window dressing to a nod already taken. Like other typical policymaking from this administration, the ordinance is a dictatorial decision that starts with a predetermined conclusion, fabricates arguments to support it, and then chips away at freedom of choice with a looter price tag attached. Most importantly, the rates for residential pickup service ought to be reduced by 25 to 50%, reflective of the service reduction from weekly garbage pickup to biweekly garbage pickup. Any increase in rates adds to the cost of housing and is just plain thievery. Finally, in that plastic bag liners are used in government office waste baskets, city-owned garbage cans, and even line landfills. To further limit the city looting of my income, including on gold-plated, overpriced water and sewer bills, my choice for a slop container will continue to be the same as my choice for dirty cans, jars, and disposable dishes. That being reused plastic bags, which I can get for free, throw in the trash, and do not have to wash or rinse out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. It's always good to hear from you. Now, Mr. Fruits.
Hi. Thank you. Eric Fruits, Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association. I want to thank you for allowing me this small slice of time to talk about a very important issue. I'd like to tell you that I speak for the Neighborhood Association, but unfortunately, I can't. The mayor has adopted a rush timeline with just over four full days. I'll say it again, four full days between the day the plan was revealed and this first reading here. Most neighborhood associations meet once a month. A lot meet less frequently, especially in the summer months. Our next general meeting won't be until September. The bottom line is the four-day timeline seems designed to cut off entirely any input from any neighborhood association. In a move that's as insulting as it is Kafkaesque, the city has indicated that they will seek public input, but they will do so 1 month after City Council votes on the ordinance. So the answer is no. Today I cannot speak for Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association. I would like to. I think my neighbors would like me to. But I can't, because 4 days is not enough time for any of us or any other neighborhood association to meet. What's really puzzling is why something so important, a downgrade in garbage service and an increase in rates, is rushed through in a matter of days with one small opportunity for public input. At the same time, I get invitation after invitation to provide input on whether the city engineer should be called the PBOT director. It seems the more trivial the change, the more input is sought. I'm sure city staff will respond that public input was taken at some point, and it was. I'd like to remind you that that public input was taken in 2007, more than 4 years ago. It was a different council. We had a different mayor. Our economy was soaring. It wasn't struggling. And no one had heard of Justin Bieber. It was an entirely different world. A radical change to a system that now works so well for so many homeowners demands some time for reasonable discussion among affected neighborhoods. As we found with the leaf pickup fee fiasco, input from neighborhood associations is crucial to avoiding some of the many pitfalls that come between ordinance and implementation. Indeed, this plan is so poorly thought out that the administrative rules seem to be rolled out on the fly over Twitter. The Portland Recycle Plan runs through 2015. While 4 days for public input is an outrage, at the same time, we don't need 4 more years of public input. We just need enough time for interested neighborhoods to see the plan, to discuss the plan, and provide input. It's reasonable. It's not outrageous. In the end, the city will have a better plan, we'll have public buy-in, and we'll avoid the repeat of the costly leaf fee disaster. Today's Oregonian editorial best sums up the position. Quote, the city should move in this direction cautiously and more gradually. Thank you very much.
Always good to hear from you, Mr. Fruits.
Thank
Hi,
you.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Steve Lipsy. Thank you for hearing us today. I'm in the Richmond neighborhood and was accidentally in the pilot program, as I discovered one morning when things changed. By the way, I consider this an upgrade in our waste collection, not a downgrade, just after participating in the program. I'm fairly recent to Portland. I followed my kids out here, as many do. But I came here not just because they were here, but because it became very clear this is a truly rational city where people think through how things are done and they do the right thing. And that was pretty rare back on the East Coast, to be perfectly honest. I think this program is an example of that thoughtfulness. Our daughter actually taught us about compost when we moved here. She feeds many people every day and really gets to see it add up. And you get to see that every little bit really makes a difference as you look at the number of tons you were talking about. We are just normal people with respect to compost. We're not religious zealots, separating every little piece of organic matter from our garbage. We just throw stuff away. The only change now is we might put it in a different bin. It's not a big deal. I think the bottom line, and what neighborhood residents were asked to comment on, is there is literally zero impact on my ability to get rid of the waste we generate. It's just no problem whatsoever. And in fact, it's kind of fun. It makes a little game to see what goes in which bin and can I actually compost this or not? How much compost can I generate? So for the family, it, if anything, became a little bit more fun to throw stuff away. Amazing thing is we actually opted for having our trash collected monthly and still see zero impact. And our can is a small can. It's amazing how much stuff can go on the compost if you just think a little bit about it. So it's actually pretty exciting. And the smelly stuff still went away weekly, so it was not a big deal that way. I mean, once we had a set of visitors for a couple of weeks, and we generated more trash than we could fit in the can. So we kept a bag full of plastic for a while till the next pickup. It, again, was no big deal because that stuff doesn't smell. I think this is really an opportunity for the Portland City Council and Portland to do something that actually has measurable impact on the planet. And I think that's a pretty rare opportunity nowadays. The little description of Senator Hatfield leading and not following, I think, was definitely something we should pay attention to. And part of the reason I moved to Portland is that it does that. It takes the opportunity to lead, not follow. Again, this was zero impact on my functioning as getting rid of waste. It was real easy. It was not a problem. I'm just annoyed that San Francisco and Seattle and those other communities did it first.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all for your testimony. Sue?
Next are Valerie Hill, Mike Dewey, Reba Shippers. They'll be followed by Val Thorpe, Jerry Powell, and Carrie Olson.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here. Please begin.
Okay. My name is Valerie Hill. Good morning, Mayor and Council members.
Could you get, Ms. Hill, could you get the mic a little closer? There
okay,
you go.
How's that?
Thank you very much.
Okay. My name is Valerie Gruder Hill. I'm an owner of Gruder Sanitary Service and president of Tri-County Council. The Tri-County Council is the local industry association that represents all 19 of the city franchised residential collection companies. Members of the Tri-County Council have been meeting regularly with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff to discuss the elements of the new collection program that is before you today, the steps necessary to implement the program citywide should you decide to do so, and the collection rates needed to pay for this new service. I am testifying today on behalf of the Tri-County Council. In the audience are representatives of the four franchised haulers that have been participating in the food waste and every other week garbage collection pilot project and rate discussions. They are Craig Holmes, Allied Waste, Jesse Heiberg, Heiberg Garbage and Recycling, Chris Carey, Arrow Sanitary, Dean Camphor, Waste Management. Portland haulers have a decades-long tradition of commitment to providing excellent collection service to the residents of the city. We are proud that our customers consistently rate the solid waste and recycling and yard debris collection service they receive as among the best city programs and services. It is very important to Tri-County Council members that these services continue to be viewed by customers as excellent and that the city's collection program continues to meet their service needs. While the Tri-County Council supports city's recycling and sustainability goals, we know this will only happen if the citizens of the city support and participate in convenient and effective collection programs. The Portland haulers support this new program and are committed to working with city council, city staff, and city residents to make it successful. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
You know, it gives me an opportunity to highlight the fact Commissioner Leonard, a former firefighter, is in charge of the bureau that gets very, very high ratings in the annual survey of Portland residents. And lesser known is the very, very high ratings that the private sector gets as our partner in collecting recycling and refuge and everything else. And so it's an opportunity to thank you for that. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate you and the others involved in the pilot. We appreciate your support and esprit de corps, and we're in this together. So thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, on behalf of Waste Management, Mike Dewey. As you're aware, Waste Management participated in the pilot. As you heard earlier, we also provide these collection facilities, food waste, and rent in Washington. So we have a pretty good track record in terms of what is going to happen. We do want to thank the staff because they've been very cooperative. This is a program, I think the Oregonian pinpointed, that there may be some issues down the road. Your staff is anticipating that. We know that we will have phone calls from customers, and our staff is going to explain that this is the right thing to do. As you know, we are in part a landfill company, so we benefit from the tip fees, but there is a better and higher use for this material. We're a waste company, but we're a materials company. And from that, we do a lot of exciting things with diverting waste from the landfill. Now, there was a discussion about methane, and I want you to know with regard to that, our facilities in Oregon, Columbia Ridge, and Riverbend have state-of-the-art collection facilities for methane. And from the methane, we do produce electricity, and we sell the electricity to the Seattle market and to the McMinnville market. There was a discussion about emissions. Our company, in the next year, by the end of next year, we think we will have 20 compressed natural gas trucks in the market here. And that has a significant effect on emissions and also particulates. It's good for the environment. It's an expensive proposition, but at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do. So we applaud the council in terms of doing this and your staff. There's enough time to get this right through October. It reminds me of the saying, the early bird gets the worm, the second mouse gets the cheese. And from that, that is an opportunity for us to make sure that we do this right.
We're the second mouse. Enough thought of ourselves. We'll have to put that on our trucks, the second mouse.
Yeah, there you go. Sometimes it's okay to be second in the process, see what other cities do and see what works best. So again, we applaud the council. Waste Management is looking forward to this. There are going to be bumps in the road, but we think we have anticipated those. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions later.
We really appreciate the insight now and moving forward because of your experience in Renton, being part of that change. So thank you for that as well.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Reva Shippers, and I'm a city employee, but I'm here on my own time. There's been testimony that 80% of people will not have a rate increase, and most Portlanders who stay with the same container size will